Welcome to this conversation. This is John O'Connor from Food for Faith, but in an interesting kind of conversation between people of three great faiths. We're not sure exactly what's going to happen. We haven't rehearsed this. This is like three people meeting on the street, deciding when to stop for a coffee at a cafe and having a conversation. So you who are listening, wherever you are part of an initial conversation. And I'm very aware that many of those who are listening will never have heard people of three great and diverse and rich faith backgrounds sitting together as friends having a conversation. So that's what we're aiming for here. Let's take a moment to introduce ourselves.
I'll start if you like, because I'm representing the most ancient of the three faiths, that is Judaism. And we're very proud to be the foundation faith of this great tradition of Abrahamic faiths. And it's also nice for me to greet you all with the three people that I'm talking to and anybody else who happens to listen with Shana Tova, which is the Jewish greetings for the new year, because we've actually just had our Jewish New Year a few days ago and we're in the middle of our high holy days, which will culminate in our Yom Kippur, our Day of Atonement, on Monday. Welcome, and my name's Paul Blaschke, and I'm a member of Temple Sinai, which is the progressive Jewish congregation in Wellington. And I've been a member of that congregation for quite a long time, but not raised as a practicing Jew. My parents lived a very secular life, and I've come to Judaism initially through having children and wanting to them to know something of their heritage. And fast forward 30 years, and my main involvement with Judaism now, as I see it, is through an action group with other faiths, including Mary and Hafsa, on climate issues, this great existential challenge that we all have. And we have, I think, some shared understanding of the challenges of climate crisis as a matter of sort of creation care, or tikkun olam, as we call it.
Well, I'll go next. My name is Mary Eastham, and I belong to St. Bridget's Catholic Parish, and I'm also a member of the Religious Diversity Center Climate Action Group. And I've been working with Paul now for several years, and we have just begun to work with Hafsa, because she made this most wonderful presentation when we had our webinar series, and she was on the panel with Helen Clark, and said some wonderful things about bringing the community together. And so when I think about the things that are really important to talk about when it comes to the great religions of the world, members of the great religions of the world coming together to talk about the existential crisis of climate change, what I think about is bringing people together in order to have conversations so that important principles can serve us. And we know that the work that we're doing for the common good of all, drawing on the highest ideals of our faith traditions to work with one another for the common good. And I've always been inspired since 2015 by the wonderful encyclical by Pope Francis, Laudato Si, which I have made quite a study of, because his concept of integral ecology is such an important concept for all of us to embrace. It's a very Trinitarian concept for Catholics, because it talks about the interconnectedness of the divine, the world, and also the human. But that's something that all of the Abrahamic traditions share, the sense of the interconnectedness between the cosmos, between the divine, and between the human. So that's the reason why just having an interfaith conversation on climate change with three people from the Abrahamic traditions, I think, is the beginning of a really fruitful conversation.
Assalamu alaikum. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So my name is Hafsa. I am originally from Hyderabad in India, and I've been in New Zealand 16 years. And I am also working with Paul and Mary as a part of the Religious Diversity Centre's Climate Action Group. And I guess my interest today and my involvement here, so thank you, John, for inviting me. And one of the key things that I think the Abrahamic traditions have in common is the lineage of the prophets that exists prior, you know, going back to Abraham, prophet Abraham. And I guess the core principle across all these prophets has been the basic necessities that humans need, and food is one of the key ones. So we do have traditions in our in Muslim community. So yes, I'm representing the Muslim community. I just forgot to say that. And one of the tradition from our prophet is that food is one of the basic necessity, and that is something all humans need to have access to. So I'll see how the conversation flows today.
Hafsa, I loved your reference to the succession of prophets. And I think it's a great pride that, you know, due to the history of the Abrahamic tradition, that, you know, our prophet Abraham sort of came first, to such a degree that they're called Abrahamic religions. And so we don't have that same sense of inheriting the prophets of other religions, which, as I say, it's a source of pride, but it's also we've missed out on that lovely inheritance. And, you know, I wish that more Jews took more notice of some of the great Christian and Muslim prophets that came after.
Yeah, I think that is something that we keep forgetting. I think we focus too much on what how we are different. And that seems to be a trend in the communities today, that we want to hyper-individualize rather than for ways in which we are actually connected to each other more. I guess for me, the basic principle again goes back to one of our traditions we have from our spiritual leaders, or what we call as imams. And it is attributed to him, Imam Ali alayhi salam, where he said that people are of two kind. They are either your brothers in faith or your equals in humanity. And that has been a core principle that I've tried to operate in life with, that, you know, that there's a greater privilege if they are brothers in faith or sisters in faith, but if they are an equal in humanity, there's a bigger responsibility there as well.
I like that idea of being equals in humanity. That's something which I think the whole interfaith world is about, embracing a common humanity. And since the whole purpose of the interfaith movement is for people to see themselves as connected, as brothers and sisters, and that we share a fundamental humanity, that's the reason why we have such a fundamental responsibility to those people who have not created the climate crisis, but are on the receiving end of it. They bear the greatest burden. They bear the greatest burden simply because of their location in the world, because they're part of the developing world and not part of the developed world, which has, because of industrialization, has this huge carbon footprint, which the developed world has to pay for.
Can you clarify there those who might suffer most? So the term global north, global south.
Yes, well, I'm talking about the global north and the global south. I'm talking about the industrialized nations in Europe and North America with the largest carbon footprint. And for example, here in Oceania, we know that our Pacifica brothers and sisters are paying a huge debt for the carbon footprint of, say, for example, Australia with their fossil fuel industry. But New Zealand also has a large fossil fuel industry. So the sense of our common humanity means that those of us who are the most responsible have a great responsibility, so that we all have enough food, as Hafsa was talking about, so that we all have enough food. We are all brothers and sisters, and we embrace a common humanity.
Well, you asked John about is it a north-south thing, that as it's expressed in terms of those who have and those who haven't. I think it's actually a bit more complicated than that, because our current age is also characterized by huge disparities and inequities within rich countries and within poor countries, between rich and poor. To take Mary's example of Pacific Island peoples who are suffering the burden of climate change and have done least to cause it, when in some ways those who come here to New Zealand and made it their home have even more of a burden, because they might be the poorest and most, in some cases, the most marginalized people within our society, which is on international levels quite a rich society, and yet we have appalling rates of disparity in child poverty and all those indicators that we're hearing. And it makes it even more galling to hear the politicians making grand promises about different parts of society and, in fact, having tolerated these terrible inequalities. And, you know, we look at the USA, which is the prime example of the, you know, what was the richest country in the world and the most powerful, and now the inequities are even stronger there than they are here in New Zealand. And all three of our religions have its people scattered over the whole world. I mean, I don't even know the extent to which the Muslim community is scattered around the whole world, and whether these inequalities are as marked within Muslim communities around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably not fruitful to sort of make comparisons or start saying, you know, well, our people are more marginalized than yours. But it's I think that inequality, wherever it happens, it is a terrible thing. It's terrible for society. It's terrible in terms of values and ethics.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I like, Paul, how you talked about inequalities, because I do believe that there are enough resources there. It's just the inequities in distribution. Mm. Because yesterday, Fonterra's profits were released.
Yep.
I'm not sure if anyone's seen that.
Mm-hmm.
Their profits have gone up quite a lot,
mm.
and it's a cooperative. So for me, I think it goes back to one of those human, like you said about ethics. Have we become more greedy as humanity? So then you look at it from a solutions perspective and you're going, the solution here, yes, there are things that we can do to resolve food insecurity and provide for food. But I think there's also a reform that needs to happen at an individual level, where the individual needs to be made conscious of their of the way they are basically consuming whatever that is, if that is money, that is at an individual level. I think it's the reform of the individual. If we were to look at a long-term solution for any crisis, of course there'll be short-term solutions, but the long-term solution, I think, goes back to the individual. What do you think, Mary?
Oh, absolutely. That's the reason why the whole notion of conversion is so important. And so when we talk about conversion, we're not simply talking about individual conversion. We're talking about a new sense of connection, a new sense of connection with one another. And that new sense of connection with one another is what it means is solidarity, is that when you see someone else, what you're seeing is yourself. And when you talk about conversion, it's about seeing the divine in someone else. And it's about seeing the divine in nature. And it's about seeing the divine in all creation. So when we talk about conversion, we're talking about a reconnection with the life of God. and the reconnection with the life of God within yourself and with all of humanity and with the nature of, as a whole. So it's about a whole creation spirituality. This conversion is also a creation spirituality, because it means once you have this conversion, you're making all things new. And Paul, I completely agree with you about the inequities within countries. When I first came to New Zealand in 1993, I came to this country from the United States thinking that, you know, I was coming to a country that didn't have so many of the social problems that the United States has. And of course, it doesn't. So that's the reason why I was really stunned that just as soon as we got here, the neoliberal model was just really taking off. And so what New Zealand was doing was abandoning a social welfare state that was trying to make sure that everybody had the basic necessities of what they needed, and adopting this model, which they could see just didn't work. They were adopting this model, which in fact created these huge inequities between rich and poor. So we know that poverty is a human construct, in the same way that we know that wealth is a human construct. So that when we talk about climate change and climate justice and climate action, we're talking about structural justice, and we're talking about critiquing structures of institutionalized violence, because they're all connected. And so this sense of conversion is so important, because it has to get to the roots of that. Well, is what the Pope calls ecological sin.
So we're talking about this conversion, the importance of the conversion of the individual. Hafsa, you began, Mary, you picked it up powerfully by giving us, I think, a very practical way forward. And I'm wondering if this is consistent across our faith, seeing the divine in creation, seeing the divine in other people. I'm wondering, is that something that we would say together as being the heart of the conversion?
Absolutely, absolutely, John. There's a verse in the Quran where when God talks about the creation of mankind, he says that, and I breathe into you my spirit. And that's the connection. That is the ultimate connection, that there is we are all divine, right? And it's just a matter of realizing our potentials. So, and that's a separate conversation in terms of spirituality, but I totally agree with Mary saying that we have to see the divine in the other.
I think we certainly, from a Christian perspective, see that breathing the life, the divine breathing of life, was into humans. But what we're saying here is the divine breathing of life is into all of creation. Of course, that's what Francis is saying in the encyclical. Paul, are we on the same page here still?
Well, I think so. I'd have to say I think my theological knowledge is a long way behind all of yours. It certainly wasn't instilled into me as a child, and it's been fascinating. The little scraps that I've picked up as an adult have coloured my view of God, of creation, and of the relationship between people and God too. But to answer your question, John, yes, I believe that it is very much there, and particularly at this time of the year. I mean, the High Holy Days are the most important days in terms of what you were talking about, Hafsa, in terms of, you know, the individual's relationship with God and turning to God. Our prayer books are called gateways, and that is reflected right throughout the year, but particularly in the High Holy Days. And just to note that concept about breathing life into all living things, all parts of the ecosystem, as I would say as a scientist, that's also got its roots, I know, in many other religions, and including here in New Zealand, in Aotearoa. The Maori concept of creation and of the relationship between gods, Atua, and people is, I know it's got those sorts of elements as well.
Mm. I think that I agree with Paul on that as well, because we you know, in the Islamic spirituality, there's the concept of that everything in creation is praising God. We just can't hear it because we are not so connected. So absolutely, I think there is that element that everything is divine. We are not so connected and in tune with what's happening around us because we are very distracted as individuals. Mm. We're distracted with realities of this world, which is the physical world. And that's a different level altogether. I know if you get into Islamic spirituality, I know people who can hear that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's conversation altogether, because then you start to realize, and I'm getting goosebumps as I say this, because when you start to realize that everything around you is praising God and is in what we call as tasbih, is in glorification of God, mm. you look at things very differently.
Mm.
You just don't look at it the same way.
I heard someone say once that all of creation is vibrating, was the word that they used, vibrating with the divine, with God. And it's not that we can't hear it. It's that we, as you implied, Hafsa, are so distracted with so many other things that we're not even listening for it. And it's such a precious gift. It's only available to those who listen and desire it.
Well, that's why in the Catholic tradition, they speak about the mystical tradition. Because in the mystical tradition, it's just people who are cultivating that third eye. Yeah. They're cultivating that third eye that out of deep contemplation and deep prayer. Mm. They've cultivated that third eye so that they're awake to it. And okay. then the more that you're awake to it, the more that you can see it. As we were talking, I was thinking about a phrase from my teacher John Courtney Murray, who used the phrase conspiracy of cooperation. And he spoke about interfaith dialogue as a conspiracy of cooperation. And he was using the word conspiracy, going back to the Latin roots of conspiratio. So, and what he meant by conspiratio in the Latin sense is breathing together. So when he was talking about the conspiracy of cooperation, he was talking about all men and women of goodwill, breathing together, thinking together, and working together.
I noticed, Hafsa, and people who are listening to this won't be able to see, but when Mary mentioned the conspiracy of cooperation, your reaction was delight. Can you say something about where that came from?
I guess within the past 2 years, we've heard the word conspiracy quite a few times, isn't it? Going to COVID. So, yeah, it was fascinating to hear Mary elaborate on what that word is and how its origins have come. So I have learned something new here today.
Wonderful. All of us. Well, I can't believe that 25 minutes has gone. This was a very easy conversation. So I think it's one that we are going to record and distribute rather than it just be a preliminary conversation between the four of us. This certainly is worthy of sharing. So what I'm going to do is conclude by asking each of us for one take home. Like what from this conversation, what's one point that you would like people to go away from this podcast with?
Well, I'll start again. This time, not as being from the oldest religion, but I'm a real neophyte when it comes to interfaith. I only got into it by accident through my climate change work and discovering that there were people of other faiths working on it as well. And the Religious Diversity Centre provided a home. And so in those few years since that happened, I have just learned so much about how other faiths are looking at these great challenges, environmental challenges, caring for the world, caring for creation, which we may talk about at a later time, I hope. But I'm also learning not just about the diversity, but about how many concepts are in tune with each other, if the language which might be different, but there are so many ideas, great ideas, unifying ideas And I've learned a lot today, just from the brief comments we've had. And also, you know, this idea of breathing together, whispering together, this conspiracy of cooperation. When people of faith come together and share their faith, and I also include people of no faith who nevertheless have a value system that we can recognize jointly as being shared values, then, well, I dare to say we can do anything with that foundation.
I'd like to pick up from there. The first time that I met Paul was in 2015, and he made a brilliant contribution to a conference that the Interfaith Group organized, and it was talking about the responsibility that all the faith traditions had to care for the earth. And Paul gave a wonderful talk about the concept of Tikkun Olam. Am I saying it right, Paul?
Tikkun Olam? Tikkun Olam.
Tikkun Olam. Mm-hmm. And I loved that phrase because it was about repairing the world. And all of us together are called to repair the world. This is something that, as Catholics would say, all people of goodwill have to embrace. And see, that was a Jewish phrase. Paul taught me that. I love that phrase, rebuilding the world, tikkun olam. It was so beautiful. And I remembered it from 2015. Yeah. That was a long time ago. But your presentation was so brilliant, and it just stayed with me all that time. And just the same way when I heard Hafsa speaking in our webinar series about the importance of people coming to a meeting without an agenda. You come to a meeting with a blank piece of paper. So, and that forces you to really listen to one another. And that, I think, is also at the heart of interfaith dialogue, that you come to learn from one another. And the way you learn from one another is that you really listen. You really listen, hoping even to be converted. I mean, that's how hard you're listening, because you see what they have to offer as so beautiful and so important and a gift from God, that you're really listening and that you accept everything they're saying as a real gift from God to you. So that's how much this conversation has just really given me a lift today. It's been such a wonderful conversation.
Thank you, Mary and Paula. It's hard to follow that. It was just so beautiful in terms of what you just pointed out, Mary. What I wanted to give away as one thing for anyone listening to this, and as I said, you know, I think there is power in the individual. So at an individual level, I'm currently reading a book, so I thought I'll quote the author. So the book is called Secrets of Divine Love. And in that, the author notes, so I'm going to quote the author, A. Helva. She says, "Love, it is the reason there is something instead of nothing. It is from the soil of love that all of existence blooms into being." And I think that is what we need to approach each other with, just love. So yes, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you all. I'm very moved by this conversation. We hadn't, the four of us, been in a room before, and we started and immediately went deeper and deeper, right to the heart of the matter. I'm very moved, very inspired. And let's just begin just with a moment of stillness and silence. The image I have is we call it the tent of the transfiguration, Jesus there encountering the ancient prophets. But the line that just stays with me is, it's good for us to be here. It is good for us to be here. It is good for us to be here.